Dot the Kangaroo.
Dot the Kangaroo, that's right. That's what time it is. The poster for this, was, by my recollection, wasn't particularly grand.
No wonder we like the platypuses. What? One of them was Spike Milligan.
Fuck yeah. Off, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. The female one.
What? You blew my mind. I thought that could be true, and I hadn't accepted the first
news.
Oh,
well played. Well played.
He's that kind of, he could have done both, quite frankly.
Yeah.
He's that kind of weird. So, you're listening to us. Start the podcast. You may as well just start there. So, I hope everyone's looking forward to the next few weeks as we do all of the sequels to Dot. Because she meets a bunny, a whale, she goes around the world, she meets some insects or something.
Nine films.
I'm quite curious about Dot Goes to Hollywood.
Oh, that one's dark. That one's pornography and...
She meets Jeremy Piven and he shows her... he shows her around all of the dark drug-dealing sex alleys.
Mulholland Drive is actually a remake of Dot Goes to Hollywood. little known fact.
Dot's first lesbian experience occurs. And she... is that the Mulholland Drive? Is that what I'm thinking of?
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
She has a nightmare about a tiny kangaroo coming under the door. Oh, and then God. She shoots herself. the last one is Dot in Space. I find it really...
she meets up with a brave little toaster.
God. Well, it's the last one, so I assume she ends up stranded in space and dies. So,
if the ending of this is anything to go by,
I'd love it. We should save this, but I was going to say I'd love it if the ending of everyone is as bleak as this one.
Each one more harrowing than the last.
Yeah,
we might keep this as a weird opener. But for now, let's intro the podcast and then get going on our mad libs. So, hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Build
Film
Conversation.
Hooray!
Hooray!
Woo! You're damn right, hooray. I'm Richard Nicholas, hello, welcome to the podcast. With me to talk about films and chat is Abigail Bain.
Hi there.
Jamie Thomas.
Hello.
And Anthony Evans.
Hello.
And the reason I'm glad you're all so positive early on in the podcast is because we have a cracking, depressing tragedy to watch. Somehow, I have given you the most bleak and depressing film I know, and it is still also an Australian musical for children. So it's a lovely cartoon from the 70s, and it is called Dot and the Kangaroo. It's from 1977, and... it's charmingly bleak. And I believe Abby has got the details to make sure you don't get it confused with its many sequels.
Has anyone ever used the term charmingly bleak before?
I have, because somehow it is.
Somehow. It is.
It's because it's a colourful cartoon with musical numbers, and yet it's probably the saddest thing I've ever seen. And I have seen The Road, so I know what bleak films are like. Sorry, Abby, though.
Dot and the Kangaroo is from 1977, as you said. It is directed by Yoram Gross, who also co-wrote it with John Palmer. It stars Barbara Frawley as Dot, Joan Bruce as the Kangaroo, and Spike Milligan in a guest role as Mr. Platypus.
Yeah. The reason I brought it to the table was because I forgot about it for a long time. I watched it when I was a kid, like on VHS or something, from the video shop called Video Land, which was by my house. I watched it. I must have liked it, but there was a haunting song in it that scares me, and when I remembered it existed, I now have nightmares forever. And I remembered that song, and then I looked it up again and subsequently found it and watched it, and then I went... I have to share this weird piece of cinema.
It was the Quack song, wasn't it?
It wasn't.
Yeah.
It wasn't. That was an annoying song, but it didn't give me nightmares. The song is the Bunyip song, which is probably the most scary and macabre thing I've ever seen in a children's film.
Was it one of those things that you got to a point in your life where you weren't sure whether it had actually happened or whether you just dreamed it, and then you found it.
Yeah, I was like, what was that scary song? Is that a memory or a dream? And then it was just like this, the piano music is incredibly like dark and sad, and it's just this horrible song about a mythological creature in Australia that kills people and is some kind of weird bird transforming monster creature that lives in the billabong, and it's called a bunyip. And I've subsequently looked up a bunyip, and it's a part of mythology, it's not just this film. But there's a song that's called the Bunyip Moon or something, and it's like bum 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 bum, and it's just, and then the lyrics kick in, and it's got raw, it's got like actual scary noises and roaring, and
I want,
it's got terrifying animation style as this,
well. That was the only song in the whole film that I could sit through.
Yeah, they are, the other songs, very, very for children.
But that one, I want to hear like a heavy distortion, heavy like doom metal cover. I want to hear like Goat Snake's take on that song, because it's so, it's so dark. It doesn't like, I don't know what it is about it, because you could show it to someone and they'll just shrug and go, "It's not that scary." But for me, I don't know. There's just something about it.
Yeah,
really upsetting.
Well, it's kind of full of Aboriginal style art that's been animated, of like tribes people running, and this it's quite a silly looking cartoon of this spotty man running with the scary teeth, and he transforms and stuff. But it's the noise, it's everything in it's the animation style, the music, and it's so, it didn't overtly scare me as a child, but looking back at it, it's the most morbid and frightening piece of nostalgia I've ever come across. So, that was the main reason. Plus, you know, it's like a weird 70s cartoon that's meant to help the Australian children care about the outback, but mainly tries to make you really sad about it. So, that's what I wanted to present to you. What were you guys expecting? Abby, can I ask you first?
Well, the only context I had for this was the clip of the Bunyip song that you had put in on social media. So I was expecting it to be deeply terrifying and strange.
I hope it was that, but in new ways that you didn't expect as well.
Oh, yes.
Anthony, yourself?
This was one of the things like that came up in college when we were all having kind of nostalgia-thons. Kind of thing. And then so someone brought this up and we all watched it. And I didn't really remember it other than the bunyip scene and like the really kind of bleak ending. And that's all I could really remember. And those two things were really quite dark. So I think I was coming in expecting something for kids, obviously, but with a bit of an edge to it. Kind of like the way they kind of used to make them in like kind of the 80s or the, like, you know what I mean?
Well, kids could handle a bit of darkness. So you're expecting a little bit of a dark tone, but in a kind of, you know, you have to make kids sad so they can feel happy kind of way. A little bit scared, a little bit, you know, challenged.
Because those were my kind of resounding memories of it. Actually, I'm telling a lie, there was one other memory and that I was kind of a bit bored. But then that's, you know,
that's a kid thing. Yeah. As soon as you're sitting there for more than about 20 minutes, you're bored.
Yeah, it's kind of for little kids, as opposed to, like, Disney films are aimed a little bit broader, aren't they? Whereas, like, really little learning about the world kids might watch this, because it's full of repetitive songs and memorable characters, I suppose. So it's, you know, it's for little kids, rather than us.
Yes, it really is for little kids.
Grown-ups judging it later now. Jamie, yourself?
I had also only seen the Bunyip song, but I'd seen it a million times, because whenever you find any sort of discussion about scary stuff from childhood on the internet, that is inevitably one of the things that someone posts.
Yeah, there's two other things that get flagged up with terrifying nostalgia films, and it's the Watership Down, because that involves the death of many bunnies, and also the plague dogs, which is just two words you just instantly know that's the most tragic thing ever.
Oh, the plague dogs, that sounds like a children's film.
Yes, and it is.
But I wasn't sure, actually, because the style of that, the Bunyip song, is actually quite different from the rest of the film. Like, yeah. It has the real backgrounds with animation over it, but the animation, like the style, like you said, is the Aboriginal cave drawings come to life, which is really unique. And I think because of that, I was expecting something a lot more interesting than
They tried very hard to be evocative and creative there. Other times, clearly they're working on a budget. They're going to loop a lot of animation. I don't blame them. But I think sometimes they're limited by budget and possibly caring. And also some of the musical songs, there's not as much effort being put in.
So I wouldn't know, to be honest, because after the first two songs, I started skipping them. Because I could not take it.
Abby, what was the thing you said about this music in the film?
These songs are eroding my soul.
Yeah. They're not so bad.
Which is kind of weird, because the actual, like, incidental music in the film is quite nice. It's just when the actual songs start, and it's essentially just, I'm an animal, and this is my personality, it becomes a bit grating.
And all the animals, well, almost all the animals, have some voice that's in the register of, like, another character who sounds like somebody backing a tractor up a chalkboard at this.
I feel like a few people doing the voiceover are reaching a little bit for voices for different types of characters. It's like, I will do a slow one now. I'm a koala bear. Derpy derpy derp voice. Oh, I need to do a bird now, do I? Oh, I guess I'm high pitched.
And also, koalas are not like that. If they were going to do a realistic koala voice, he would speak in the low, intimidating whisper of a serial killer, because they are horrible animals.
They only eat specific types of gum leaves, and usually their children eat purified poop of the gum leaves. So they're pretty weird creatures.
What kind of realistic film didn't show an owl shitting out of its mouth like they do in real life? If you want to teach kids about nature, we're not holding anything back.
Well, that's the thing. With the tone is, we're going to teach you a little bit about nature. And basically, it's going to be a roll call of some animals. And it's generally saying, be quiet at the points it tries to hit for, like, going on nature reserves or in the outback or in, you know, it's predominantly set in a woods or a jungle in Australia. And so they're trying to,
it's in the bush, mate.
It's in the bush. Yeah, I'm not going to keep doing. I'm not going to try any dodgy Australian accents. They'd only come off badly.
But has, like, that ever stopped you before?
No, indeed. But I'm going to rise above. But it's trying to say, at a waterhole, be nice and remember, humans are generally horrible to animals, and so be respectful. Don't be an idiot and get lost. It's got a message to children there, so it's somewhat. The aim was somewhat educational with the film. I forget what point I was trying to make overall, but that's what it's kind of going for. But it decides to do that in a sad, unrelentingly bleak way.
Yeah, no, it teaches kids lessons. It teaches them to, you know, respect wildlife and...
Oh, yeah, that's it. So it's trying... It's not trying to give you the reality of each of these animals, but it's trying to be more realistic than just, you know...
And it's also...
They wear trousers and, you know, dick around with each other.
And it also teaches you, you know, the nature of life, because the film ends with Dot's friend abandoning her and Dot in tears. The end credits.
No, less your tears and calling out in betrayal as we watch a real life kangaroo hop off, leaving the child it's bonded with.
There was a lot of...
It's presumably dead kid.
Yeah, there was a lot of, like, emotional whiplash right at the end.
Yeah,
that's a good way of putting it.
But, like, really at the end, there's, like, a sad scene with, like, the kangaroo, and then all of a sudden there's a chirpy bird, and then cut back to, like, crying parents in despair, and then cut back to chirpy bird singing, and then cut back to, like, kangaroo going off into the distance.
That's
like,
right
at the end, it's really draining, because it's just so, oh, God, where's this going to go?
It was at its worst at the end, but it was like that all the way through. Like when she was saying, I remember when I had a Joey, and she cries. And the kid's just like, it's so comfy in here.
No, you're not doing justice to her voice, because it's not just high pitched and annoying. It's like throaty. It's so comfy in here.
I'm ignorant, but nice meaning.
to me, I'm ashamed to say, but she always kind of felt like those slightly older women pretending to be schoolgirls.
Yeah.
And it was slightly just a bit weird.
It was horrible. I'm so nice. I've got something to say to you, kangaroo. Let me grab your ear and pull your head down to my
back. She really yanks her ear, doesn't she?
Yeah. Pushing that shrew thing into the water, just laughing.
Yeah, she was so mean as a character. Another great example of her dots as a character is like this innocent, lost young girl. She is super mean most of the time without meaning to be. And the best bit is when they find the Aboriginal tribal dancers, and one of them's wearing the carcass of a dead kangaroo, and the kangaroo's like, "Oh dear, this is horrible." And Dot's like, "Oh, I love dancing. Can we stay and watch the dancing?" And the kangaroo's like,
"Okay, I might get murdered."
Yeah, we'll stay and watch like one of these people wear the skin of someone who is me, like one of me. Yeah, sure, we'll watch.
I mean, potentially, she's lost, like, part of the bleakness is we set up the character of the kangaroo as having lost her own child when she lost her child in an incident where humans were trying to hunt them. She ran away, left the kid so that she could lead the hunt away, lost her child when she came back, and has never found the child since, and feels like she has to rescue Dot, who has got lost early on in the film. And so she's helping the child, despite hating humans, and then puts up with Dot wanting to watch what could be the corpse of her long-lost son being worn on a man doing a tribal dance.
What I thought was going to happen.
And endangering herself because they've got a pack of dingoes.
Dingoes,
mate. So they have done it. I've been slightly Australian sounding. So the pack of dingoes could kill her and Dot.
Yeah.
And she's still like, "I guess, kid, you can watch the dancing," despite it being being insensitive, terrifying, dangerous, and morbid. But yeah, let's stay. We set the precedent by letting you watch some birds do a dance for a bit.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of levels this weird, twisted darkness goes to.
And I wanted to, before I forget, that dancing birds thing was one of a few sequences in the film where it goes on for ages and there's no dialogue, and it's like the film is saying, Look at the animation, isn't it beautiful? No, it's not. It's rubbish.
It's poor. And it's also like, here's a ballet interlude between sections of the same animation of a kangaroo with a little girl in the pouch bouncing along the outback.
Fuck you.
Riding along in the pouch of a kangaroo is the only way to do a thing. Like, and also, that'd be really unhygienic to get into the pouch of a kangaroo. They're not for humans.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realise that, but they are kind of like horrible and slimy in there.
Get in here where I keep my developing embryo.
Because Anthony, as he implied, has had a ride in a kangaroo, and it wasn't the barrel of laughs that he thought it would be. I got a lot of diseases that day, didn't you?
Unfortunately.
You live
still got some of them.
Still can't go to sleep at night without foaming at the mouth and hearing the song about hopping through the outback. Oh, so we haven't really started talking about it. We've just been, let me tell you about the bit that's mental. Yeah.
I suppose the most obvious thing to talk about is the kind of animation style where they have backgrounds which are real photos or footage. Film, and then all the animation is done on top of that. And whilst I get it, I mean, I'm sure it's a lot cheaper to have gone out and taken pictures. I don't know, it didn't... There were moments where it kind of worked when they were kind of... where there was more movement.
Like, they had frogs doing another annoying musical interlude, but they kind of plop into the water, and it was kind of effective like that. Occasionally, it's a little bit terrible, you know, YouTube-style green screen, like, comically bad. And other times, it's kind of, I get what you're going for.
I like that you can see under the surface of the water, so that when an animated character jumps in, there's a splash and then they're gone, like they've just jumped into the abyss. But he's not coming back.
Yeah, but you got to appreciate, right, guys? It's the 70s. No. And they're trying possibly on a budget, and it's still, you know, the cartoon characters are quite nicely animated, even if they're only, you know, if they're a few frames short of a masterpiece. But you know, there's some nicely drawn animation over quite a creative look to it, the live action with animation on top, given that it was the 70s, you know.
No, I agree. It's easy to not remember this is from like 1977, and whilst yes, Disney had existed for like 50 years by then, they were pretty much like the only kind of huge company doing stuff like that.
Yeah, so it's still funny to mock now, though.
Oh, of course. I mean, but, at the end of the day, it is a child's film, and like we have 20 to 30 year olds here watching it and analysing it, we're going to have a far different perspective.
Yeah. So essentially, you know, well, it's kind of a bleak opener because it starts with like a sad lullaby, pan in like an owl flying, and then pan in on a child crying lost in the forest.
That it annoyed me straight away when it had the title sequence, I think it was, that had the animals coming out, all peeping and stuff. Mm. And then it was her crying. And it showed them all again.
Yeah.
Immediately. I was like, no. That's worse than Filmation. And Filmation do this all the time.
But they establish this sad scene. And they know they're going to get the ball rolling down the tragedy cliff or whatever. But they essentially, you know, show the creatures coming out to see her. And I think, you know, it's essentially straight in with Kangaroo comes, starts talking in clicks because, you know, animals and humans can't talk. And the way round this is the kangaroo offers her some kind of root that she can eat, gestures she should eat it, and then as soon as she eats it, she's, you know, basically says, you know, they establish they can understand each other, and that you shouldn't eat too much of the root, because it'll make a miserable situation all the more miserable, because knowledge equals misery.
First lesson, kids.
Too much knowledge is a bad thing.
No, second lesson. First lesson. This lesson is eat these.
Eat roots, magical roots that translate.
Yeah.
Like, they're tasty, and they translate the animals, so you can be like Dr. Doolittle. How come we don't have these in a farm? Everyone would be vegan, and we'd eat these root things, and we'd chat with the animals. It'd be great.
I like the idea of a kid eating something that's found on the floor of a forest, and suddenly she can understand all the animals.
Yeah, that's what I was going to mention. Because like before like she meets the kangaroo, she takes like a big fall and like hits her head against the tree. So there's always the kind of question like through this, it's like, is she dead? Is this a dream? Has she gone mental, or has she been drugged by this stuff that the kangaroo's given her?
Yeah, she just eats this
creepy kangaroo. Oh, here, kid. I got some candy in my pouch.
Oh gosh, the alternate reality, or the reality of this could be much darker. But the tumble she takes as well is insane, because the footage is really awful compared to the cartoon is her falling, but the background is so implausibly steep and insane.
Yeah.
But what I love, there's the whole reason she's in this problem is she wants to get superior grass for her rabbit to eat. So, and her parents are like, oh, I don't know, can't the bunny eat like regular grass? And she's like, no, the stuff by the billabong is much better. Hence, I should go wandering into the forest and get lost. Yeah.
I won't get lost, I promise. Okay, be careful. All right, bye. Gets lost. Okay.
Falls down, stumbles around confused, then meets a kangaroo that can talk, or possibly some creep with drugs. Whatever.
Did anyone else find it a little bit like really awkward when she first meets the kangaroo and it's just kind of clicking and moaning at her for like a minute before anything kind of happens?
Ages!
And Dot very soon makes her character of I'm oblivious to everyone else's suffering apparent. Because as the kangaroo saying, don't eat too much, she's like, oh, it's really tasty. I think I'll keep eating it. No, don't eat too much of it. Om nom 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 nom.
No, don't worry about it. I'm an idiot. Like, I can't take advice or instruction at all. That's why I'm here in the first place.
The kangaroo is quite a realistic woman, kangaroo, and she's quite, you know, she's clearly a worn-out mother of a character.
Yeah.
So she cares, but she's kind of tired with Dot a lot of the time.
The kangaroo is actually the only character I like in the whole film, because she's the only one that has any, like, real depth. Like, she actually seems like a character. The rest of them are all just annoying noises, including Dot.
Well, some of them have a little bit more of a character in that they have a personality trait. She's the only rounded one.
Does the kangaroo actually sing at any point? That's another plus for the kangaroo.
So, and what I like is, like, the kangaroo is quite condescending because it's like, well, we all speak, you idiot. You don't understand us. You stupid humans, why don't you listen? Anyway, what's the problem? And then she Doc can't really communicate very well because she's like, I'm from home, I have to go home. Where is the way? What's home? What are you talking about? Do you live in a tree? Like, we're animals, we don't understand these concepts. And they all treat her like she's a dim-witted animal with low-quality fur, I think that is what... The kangaroo seems to think her dress is fur, and it's rubbish. Like, because it can tear easily. But essentially, the whole film is a journey of the kangaroo trying to figure out how to get Dot home, because she feels sorry, she's lost a child, she hates humans, but she's going to deal with it, and she feels like she owes it to Dot to help. And Dot just has a lovely time being a little bit sad and worried that her parents are scared and looking for her and that she's a bit thirsty or tired. But Dot fundamentally just goes along with it all like it's a nice day trip. Several days in the forest fighting to survive.
Yeah, the time scale in this is quite misleading.
Yeah.
Because you get... It only feels like it's been about 3 nights from Dot's point of view. But they've already been looking for her for 2 days on the first night for her.
Well, a lot of days go past. I think, you know, what's a couple of minutes and a terrible song for us is sometimes we travelled all day to get to the only bit of water, then we had to drink and go to sleep. Yeah, well, it did really well. The songs make it feel like the time has passed in real life. Like a whole day goes by in just a small song.
The film ends when they finally find Dot's home, and then as soon as she, like, goes over the fence and runs back to the house, she's a full-grown woman. Her father's dead. Her mum's an old woman.
Speaking of the mum and dad, like, so go on if you want.
I was going to say, she's a full-grown woman with the mind of what appears to be a retarded 5-year-old in the first place.
She's lived wild like Tarzan, but or Mowgli. And her parents have moved on and had other children who are living there now. I don't know. Her mind unraveled from day one. As soon as she ate those roots, nothing ever was real.
Started understanding the animals.
So anyway, like, in reference to the parent character, another way they amp up the tragedy is obviously they've lost their child and they're looking for... There's like a dad and like an older guy going with the dad to search through the outback and forest and stuff. And, you know, because several days pass, they sort of set up camps at night and basically worry about their lost child, who is alone in the forest, and either say melancholy, sad things to each other or say things to perk up their spirits. But while this is happening, the dad seemingly is coughing a lot, as if he's dying of cancer. It's just like he's got some terminal illness, and and they eventually turn back and give in after several days. And it's like, this is so sad and bleak. Is the dad going to die? What's happening? So I thought that was another way they amped up the sadness.
Yeah.
They had that reverse thing after a while, where, you know, when you've got a title character, you're relatively sure that they're not going to die. It got to a certain point in this where I just started to think, nobody's going to live through this. Everyone's going to die, and that's going to be the message. Everything ends.
Safe. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the animals are farthing wood.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things with the story is it goes through many sections. We won't go into every one, because essentially it's they meet some ducks. The ducks are frightened and want to drink, and they're going to sing about that in an annoying way.
That was extra... The irony made that extra painful for me, because it was, we're so thirsty, we need to drink, but I can do a song!
Yeah.
Oh, can you?
But
can
we're
you?
We're scared of the human.
Of course you can.
We can't have a drink. We can't just have a drink here. Even though we were here before you and could have been drinking already.
Yeah.
I don't know.
the kangaroo's like, oh no, it's safe. Then everybody comes and has a drink. I didn't see any animals. Actually, no, that's not true. I was going to say I didn't see any animals ruthlessly killing and eating other animals, but I actually did, because there's the scene with the snake. Yeah. And the, yes. What I think is a kookaburra, yeah.
Quite a dramatic scene. And I like the insert of the kookaburra, because the kangaroo, they bed down after this lagoon nonsense, and the animals have drank and got over it. And they go, yeah, they go to sleep, a bit more bleakness as we realise how horrible the peril is. But they go to bed in the forest, and when Dot wakes up and hopes it was a dream, she wakes up to the reality that she's alone and with a snake that's going to maybe attack her. And there's this great kookaburra character who's kind of, he's kind of downplaying the peril she's in and chatting to her like, yeah, so I'm just babysitting you, kangaroo's gone off to make arrangements. Oh, the thing with the snake is, it'll attack you as long as, but if you don't move, you'll be fine. Oh, then, yeah, he's just nattering on, and then he eventually deals with it and takes it away.
And he keeps laughing as well. Like, he's just had some kind of mental break years ago.
That's,
and he's now just this, like, soulless murderer who just lives in the forest. And kangaroo is like, can you keep an eye on her? I'm going to go and find us something to eat. And kookaburra's like, yeah, yeah, I can eat something right here.
but that's the thing, is they use a lot of real animal sounds throughout, yeah, the film. And the kookaburra, obviously, its call is like a laugh, a maniacal laugh. So he's when like he when he breaks up his speech with laughter, he just, they actually play a kookaburra going, like, you know. And oh, I liked him though, and he's quite a good Australian creature to find out about. So tick. So, you know, but we have all these, you know, we should probably just name some of the incidents and not go into every scene, because there's quite a few. So they meet the birds that dance, they meet, like, who else do they meet?
I was going to say we skipped over two songs that happened in the waterhole incident. the first one was the ducks with the quack song, which, my God, that is going to be haunting me forever. It's one of those songs that's just so stupidly simple that you can't help but have it in your head.
How did they have the audacity to make it?
But it's that, really, it really, I don't know what to say about it.
And like it does in any kids film that involves ducks, is when you know what ducks are actually like.
What, you mean gang raping?
Yes.
Gang raping mallards with their corkscrew penises.
Exactly. Mm. And then continuing to do so once they've, you know, raped them to death.
They're very much taking the tack of humans are bad, even though animals are basically like humans in that they fight to survive.
A lot of ways worse.
Well, I don't know about your private life, Jamie, but
oh, isn't nature beautiful? And just these three singing male ducks, and then a floating dead female one behind them.
We couldn't drink, but we could. We've run out of energy from our
I'm thirsty now.
Yeah. So it would have been interesting if they'd have really told us about the habits of some of these creatures that presumably eat each other as well. There's an owl, and there's also little rodents and stuff.
That... Oh, I almost forgot about the owl, my only character that I really liked.
Oh, yeah, he turns up at night. Go on, Abby.
No, he's just things about... They ask him to not do his sort of whale. His call, that's a bit of a whale.
His song.
A call, his song. He goes, oh, don't you like it? I thought it was lovely. Everyone here is so miserable. And it makes them a bit more miserable.
Like, yeah.
I love you, owl. You're exactly what this needs.
It's just this blue owl who's kind of like a goth who wants to sing his out-of-tune, horrible owl hooting to make everyone extra sad and keep everyone awake. I think they name-dropped him as well. He had a weird like name. He was the only one, I think, that had an unusual name. I can't remember it now. It was in the lullaby,
Robin,
I think.
Smith.
Yeah. Yeah, the lullaby at the beginning.
So sad, like, and weird.
It was a bit odd because she kept, like, because it's right at the beginning and she keeps mentioning words like bunyip and, like,
some
just other words. It's like, what is this?
Yeah. With the way the film starts with those opening credits and that song, that was actually the moment where the film instantly just lost me. The singing started, the song started, and I just went, oh, no.
Well, you know, children have short attention spans, so they're probably playing Lego and tweeting while they're watching. Well, maybe not in the 70s, but still. but, you know, other characters that turned up. Dim-witted koala bear, who doesn't really grasp much, but who can blame him? He seems to get life. He sits up in his tree, has a nice time. What's your problem? You know, he doesn't really grasp her problem, but is, and he falls asleep while talking to them. Who else do we get?
There's those dancing stork bird things.
Oh, one of the key plot points is the kangaroo gets the animal council of animals. We also have a dog in the background, which is nicely apt. Hunting for the kangaroo. But yeah, the council of animals, is that what it's called?
Yeah. It's like, and they're all there, as we are helpfully reminded by a 20-minute panning shot of a photograph of a forest with lots of crudely drawn 70s animation animals everywhere. I'm sure a couple of them blink. Repeated as well.
A few of them blink as well to show you that they're really there.
Just to frighten you even more, because this is after the Bunyip song.
I particularly like the grumpy-looking wallaby, I want to say, or wombat.
Well, I like the who appears to be the like head speaker of the meeting, the cockatoo.
Right.
Just because I know someone who has two cockatoos, and from his experience, how awful they are, and how awful it is to live in a house with two of them. Because all they do is repeat phrases they've heard and scream periodically.
That's me as and, well.
Just like children.
And they scream to let you know that they're like agitated, but they also scream to let you know everything's fine.
That's good.
And just it's your like job. Children.
What I love about the Council of Animals that has the cockatoo as one of the merry members is they are all jerks.
and useless.
Yeah. Their first response is like, oh, can't help you. What do you want? I can't believe you made us all come to the Council of Animals for nothing. What do you want? Oh, we can't help her find a home. None of us have been there. We can't help you. What do you want from us?
It basically, what it accomplishes is them palming it off on someone else to make it their problem. we can't help you, but maybe this guy can. Bugger off.
Who isn't in the meeting? The platypus. Yeah, the platypus is famously knowledgeable. Yeah, he didn't come to the meeting, did he? He knows. Ask the platypus. We can't help you. Seriously, we can't help you. Get lost.
I want this meeting to end, because to be honest, some of the other animals in it look really appetizing, and I want you to all go away so I can kill and eat them.
Yeah. Abby, do you have any thoughts on the Council of Animals? The PTA
pretty
meeting
pretty much
of beasts.
Nailed it there. And even when they did say, oh, well, I'd like to help you, I don't know where that is.
Yeah.
Sorry. I was like, oh, great.
I can help you. Wait, no, I can't. I'm thick. Never mind.
They're horrible until Kangaroo goes, so, I don't know if you know my backstory, gang. I know you do. I have a tragedy to tell you. I lost my child. I hate humans. But if I'm helping her, you all have to help her. And they all go, you're shaming us into it, aren't you? I guess we'll help. Yeah, guilt tripping them in. And they all go, yes, we could help. Ask someone else is our advice. So they go on another quest to find the platypus who's clever. Like, the platypus is called Platypus. He also has a wife, who's also a platypus. But this is where Spike Milligan, I didn't even realise at the time, Spike Milligan lends his vocal talents to the platypus. Whose character
is... At the beginning, it also said guest animator, so I assume he might have animated the platypuses as well.
Oh, wow. That's talented. And yet in this, the animation isn't that much to celebrate.
Nah. I might be wrong. I mean, it might be something else, but it did say guest animator at the beginning as well.
He did a bit of Terry Gilliam animation, I reckon. Made it a bit more surreal. Just a thought. Yes. Abby, do you want to have a crack at telling us the story of the platypus and his Latin name?
Well, he's just... Because the platypus is one of the oldest creatures in Australia, they act like he's from one of the oldest families in Australia, and he's all stuck up about it. And how... No, you refer to us by our Latin name. And he says what that is.
Sings and it several times.
You do.
Good. A kind of good song. No. The frogs, I thought...
Relative.
The frogs earlier on that did a, we're on a log, we're on a frog, we're frogs, we're on a log, oh God, we're on an alligator, it's going to eat us. But that was an annoying song, but I kind of liked them. But with the platypuses, there was more lyrical effort in the song lyrics. Yeah. You know, there was better lyrics.
It was more complex.
Yeah, sure, that's the word, not better. More complex, and therefore I gave it more credit.
I skipped the frog song as well as soon as they turned up, and they went like, what? The first one went like, ribbit, and then the other one went like, tits, prick, whatever. I don't know what they were saying.
But, essentially, you know, Kangaroo and Dot hang out, and they're like, yeah, he'll come when he's ready. He's not that kind of helpful guy. And he's eventually, after he kind of grumpily deals with them, he essentially says the same thing as the other animals, but more specifically, someone who will actually know. He kind of goes, I guess there's, where do you live? Right, tell me some places and landmarks. Right, yeah. Then this, oh, there's these type of animals? You need to ask the animal that you know lives by you where your house is, okay?
Yeah.
So think about it. The animals that live by you will know. Go to that animal, it's a bird or something, ask him. Like, that's what you need to do. That's why I'm the clever animal. I mean,
don't they find the right one by accident as well?
Well, they kind of know where he lives, I think.
They go vaguely in his direction and they find him.
And the thing is, with platypuses, I think it's a particularly good animal to introduce because it's Australia's own and famous weirdest mammal ever. They're literally the weirdest mammal. They have a song that explains this. I don't know if you guys were paying attention, but I learned some stuff. But they're like beaver, mole, duck things. They're halfway between ducks and moles and beavers, I guess, not moles. And they're mammals, the only mammals that lay eggs and somehow breastfeed. They seem like a genuine hawk. So I kind of love platypuses because they baffled people for years by being unbelievable cryptids that actually exist.
I'm baffled as to how you breastfeed an egg.
They didn't get into that in the song, did they? I think maybe they're either ducks disguising themselves as beavers or beavers with like fake bills on. So I'm maybe not sure they do exist. But this is where I first learnt about the platypuses and fell in love with the creature that is so weird. I don't even know. They're called platypuses, like they're a platter of cats or something. I don't even... Who came up with that name? Stupid. They should be called duck beavers. Surely, that's what they are. Duck
but
beavers.
Rich, you digress.
I do digress. The general gist, though, is they, after having dealt with many people and a search party failed to find them, many nights out in the bush, they find the correct animal to ask the way, and he goes, oh, I'm lovely. Obviously, you'll have to sit through a song, and then I'll show you the way with my... I will intercut, as Anthony mentioned, a chirpy, happy song with sad family members crying at the loss of their child, who they presume died many nights ago. And that's kind of how they get out of it, is he goes, I'll show you, it's this way. And then Dot's like, oh, I found it, brilliant, you know.
There's also the scene with the Aborigines.
That cannot be missed. We partly talked about it, but yeah, it's one of the... And the Bunyip song. I didn't mention how that came up. That was essentially, let's go to bed in this cave because it's raining. Oh, look, there's Aborigine paintings. Old paintings. The kangaroo, like, elaborates on the story of the Bunyip and this weird creature that scared off the humans that originally lived in this cave, which is today fine to sleep in?
Yeah.
Is there a Bunyip? Don't know.
I was so disappointed that there wasn't. I was really disappointed that the Bunyip never actually turned up in this, because I wanted this film to have a monster other than Dot.
Yeah, well, that is the way it seemed to be leading, didn't it?
And it would have been weird, but the way they get round to it in the end is as a kind of clever survival from the humans and the dingoes. There's a few birds that famously have like a really loud, scary noise in their call, and they frighten off the stupid dingoes and men who think the Bunyip is coming after them. Because, you know, the Aboriginal people of Australia are scared of silly monsters that don't exist.
Did you just call them the Aboriginal people?
I didn't mean
because
to.
That is amazing. Because they were there originally.
The Aborigine people. The Aborigines. The Abos, as I think is the politically incorrect term to use.
Yeah. I wouldn't call them that to them.
No. I have no beef with the Aboriginal people. It's the film that implies they're scared of monsters that don't exist.
It is surprisingly not immensely racist the way they're portrayed.
It's trying to be respectful. It's talking about their culture, and it shows them doing just a tribal dance, essentially. That's all we see. And then some dogs. This is the scene that unfolds. The Bunyip song is sang by someone. Some voice sings it. And we learn the story of how a bunyip is a really scary thing. It comes out at night time and it'll get you. It has claws. Yeah. It can transform. It's the most scary thing ever. And it wants to eat you and it's evil. And it's a and we've talked about it partially. It's just this incredible, scary song that's morbid and beautiful. And that, you know, is a perfect song to go to sleep on. And then later on, when they come across the Aboriginal people doing a tribal dance, Dot is just like, "Oh, this is nice and interesting." And the kangaroo's like correctly scared and worried. And so we have the tension then of quietly watching while dingoes could attack at any time. And then Dot, who misunderstands the dance, thinks that one covered in a dead kangaroo skin is going to be killed. Because the dance has spears in it or something. And so she like cries out and then they have to run for their lives.
There's this bit where the kangaroo fights with a dingo and shoves him off a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
That usually I wouldn't like because technically a dog dies. But in that one it's, you know, kill or be killed. I get that. But everything after that where she jumps over the gap and she's trying to get up back up onto the cliff. And Dot's just there in a pouch. Gormless.
Yeah, she's got this kind of patient yet expecting face. I don't know. It's just kind of sitting there like, I'm in mortal peril, but I'm sure this will all work out.
Don't jump, I'm too heavy, you won't make it. And then she jumps and she like just makes it, but she's hanging onto the edge. And then Dot just stays in her pouch, doesn't try and climb out and up the side. Oh, I'm probably still too heavy, this isn't helping at all. But
in previous scenes, she gets in the pouch in a fabulously cute manner, where she sort of tumbles in. Yeah. That makes up for it. Yeah, so we have this incredible peril of her jumping a cliff with the child weighing her down. Dot does say, you know, she's willing to, you know, stay. If she'd have just left Dot with the Aboriginal people, I'm sure they might have handed her back or raised her as their own. Or they might have just sold her back to the white folk who took over the land.
Yeah.
Who knows what they would have done. The dingoes might have eaten her. But, you know, the leap is made, she eventually climbs up the cliff, and then Dot does get to be returning the favour somewhat, because she does help. She mainly cries, but she nurses her back to health. She nurses her back to health with the advice of the
mud and leaves.
Yeah.
Essentially. Just rub this shit all over her, she'll be fine.
The birds kind of spell it out for her, because she's an idiot, as they call her on it. And she's like, yeah, there's water here, duh. Dig up the water, give her the medicine flowers. And there's a long montage of her nursing the wound on the kangaroo, giving her flowers to eat, and making a small amount of water available. That presumably takes another fortnight.
Dot actually grew up to be a nurse, and then...
or a vet.
Now she's in prison. A vet, yeah.
A vet, surely. But, so Dot evens the odds. Like, you know, kangaroo's been saving her all the time. But Dot does, you know, return the favour and save her life to some extent. Even though it's her fault.
If given super specific instruction, she is capable of doing something vaguely intelligent.
If birds can instruct her on what to do exactly, she can man up or woman up and save the day and be caring and loving. And she sort of helps her away and, you know, the dingoes either fall to their death or go back scared of the birds that can do scary noises.
Scream.
Yeah, scream horribly. So there's that moment, which I think was key to the film as well. But essentially, you know, the end of the story is kangaroo gets her back eventually after many tedious songs. And Anthony, you already mentioned the kind of ridiculous, harrowing, sad ending where Dot says, come on, come meet my parents. They'd be really grateful. And they would. And they might want to know about the root that can make you understand animals. And maybe make millions selling this root. I don't know. But the wonderful tragedy is that the kangaroo's like, F this, I'm going. I'm going to type. I don't like humans that much. I mean, I helped. I was obliged to. For my own reasons. But I'm not going to stay and be nice and get any credit.
Yeah. And then you have the bird, I can't remember the name of the bird, the red-winged, blah, blah, blah. And he just kind of like flies off going, it needs its freedom, 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 freedom.
Yeah. Yeah.
She can't be tamed, and yet she can't hang about by a fence for 5 minutes for the girl not to be delusional. And come to, like, and I'll show you the kangaroo that rescued me, mummy and daddy. Oh, yeah. It's gone, and now I'm sad forever.
And now I'm in an asylum. All the other films... It's like Return to Oz.
Yes.
I get it. I mean, it's a fair point. I mean, you know, we're humans, they're animals. We can't really kind of exist in the same way together. And that she had to go off. But did it really have to draw out it at the end like that? It's like I was expecting, like, okay, no, you know, we'll cut back to them and they'll be all happy and, you know, they have reunited. But then she's just kind of sobbing, and then the credits come up as she's sobbing. Yeah. It's like, that is the bleakest thing I have ever seen.
What a journey. Wow. Yeah. And it's also, like, you know, it's meant to be the happy ending after all of that torture and sadness. Is like, yay, she's returned home and no one died, and she will live happily ever after. But also, we're going to go out crying. Like, it's a sad
song. We're
going to
stick the knife in and turn it.
There's not even, like... You know, how you would end it. To, like, fair enough, have the kangaroo not be there, and then the girl crying at the fence, and then have the parents come up and maybe say something nice about, like, nature or kangaroos. And she sees, like, kangaroos in the distance, and she's like, you know, she's out there somewhere now with her own kind or whatever, but not just stand there and cry, fade out credits.
Yeah. I would have accepted a kind of, the parents come out, they high-five the kangaroo, and they go, hi, Skip, where are you off? Oh, I'm just off on more adventures to save people. Goodbye, Skip. Goodbye. Like, it kind of turned into the Skippy TV show, and that could have been the weird The first adventure Skippy ever had was saving Dot, and then Skippy went on to save lots of TV-based children in another medium. Like, I know anything would have been like just a thumbs up. Like you say, kangaroos off in the distance, and then still the parents think, okay, she survived in the wild on her own. Maybe there was a kangaroo. Maybe she's just delusional and is a fantasist. Yes, Dot. You were very dehydrated in the forest. Whatever you say, she's crazy.
You were eating whatever you found on the ground.
Don't eat that. That's dog muck.
Let's not forget, there are shots of kangaroos in the distance. In fact, there's one particular shot that plays over, like, real kangaroos, of where you hear Dot crying, and there's a kangaroo, a real kangaroo, rubbing its eyes.
Also symbolically crying.
Yeah, nice.
Because she hasn't found her child.
Great.
Yeah.
What a happy ending.
And it's literally the kangaroo turning her back on this child that she's been looking after and running away, because humans and nature can never mix, because it'll all end in some kind of fake barbecue, I imagine. So that's what I wanted to show you, guys. It's Dot and the Kangaroo, one of the worst tragic stories that ended happily, sort of, and a gem from the 70s.
Thank you so much for sharing it.
There's 9 of these films.
Not 9 with... The kangaroos make... There are kangaroos in the other ones, but there's Dot with various animals.
Dot and the bunny, Dot and the whale.
Because that's the obvious leap, isn't it?
Yeah. Dot and the dinosaur.
Some of the human acting in, like, Dot around the world, I haven't seen it all, is really dodgy. See, they have, like, human family and Dot's an actual little girl at first, before she transforms into a cartoon.
You know,
and
it's just terrible
acting. What? We've got loads more to do?
No, after all of that, she didn't even take any grass back for that rabbit.
The rabbit starved to death long ago. Mm. Her parents presumably could have fed it.
That's true. Her dad would have been out looking for her, and her mum would have been grieving somewhere.
Yeah.
That rabbit's dead.
I mean, they keep a trapped animal. She should really free it.
Especially now. I like all the like Dot and Bill and Ted's
bogus jokes. So what? There's Dot goes round the world. Did you say there's Dot in space or something earlier?
That's the last one. Dot goes bananas.
Doc meets the brave little toaster on Mars. I think I probably said that joke, but like Doc, the one I've seen the start of like Doc Round the World because I couldn't be bothered because it was too hard. The acting was too awful a setup for that film. But I remember renting the video for one where Doc, I think, shrinks down and meets lots of insects. I remember being quite good. She deals with everything being huge and perilous. But also makes friends with, I don't know, grasshoppers and stuff.
I like the idea of this being like realistic. She shrinks down and there's all these just like feral, vicious insects with like dripping mouths and doing like horrible things. Like
all serving like, oh, one queen.
Where do baby spiders come from? And there's like two spiders have sex and then the male one's dick breaks off in the female before she eats him.
Learn about
nature, kids.
It would have been interesting if they have gone properly realistic and dark. It would have been quite the lesson for 5-year-olds.
Dot gets bigger, like she's helped by an ant or something the whole film, and then she eventually gets bigger again, and she's like, "Oh, Mum, there's the ant that helped me get home." And her mum's just like,
just gets a kettle of water and drowns the ants. From what I recall, it took a fairly... Dot, I accidentally shrunk the kids, kind of, you know, like, honey, I shrunk the Dot, and then let's deal with big pieces of food and running away from big scary
It's
things.
Interesting that there's 9 of these, and there's 9 Hellraiser films.
there's 10 Hellraiser films. I know that, because Mark Warren's a number 10, I admit it. Yes.
So there's 9. They're both... tremendously successful horror films.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's plenty more Dots where that came from.
Oh, unfortunately.
So, what outback thing... They had everything in this Australian, didn't they? They referenced the Aboriginal people. They had their instruments. So they had, like, the sticks that you hit and a didgeridoo. For some reason, part of the dance involved a... what's that stick you throw when it comes back? Boomerang. You know, they had everything Australian in this. They didn't have cork hats or surfing. But they had most things.
Or Ramsey Street.
They didn't have barbecues. But or Mad Max or Priscilla Queen of the Desert.
Where was Toadfish Rebecca in all this?
What?
He was too early. He was like 89, 92, something.
No, everything that exists in Australia has existed forever.
Like the what's the name of the family that takes Tori in? They were there.
I'm getting lost in Neighbours chat.
Of course, we're talking about an Australian film. It all leads back to Neighbours.
There wasn't a wobble board. I'm a bit disappointed. So you know, it gave
Kennedy's.
Us a lot of
the sorry.
Kennedy's. Right. Carl Kennedy.
So
and his wife Peggy Hill.
So what Neighbours character do we rate this film as? No, like any rating is welcome. Any way you can find an analogy for what this film was.
Harold Bishop after his stroke.
Oh my God. Sad, bleak and unbelievable. Anyone got any suggestions for a rating?
It's the decorative skin of one of the bush animals, like a kangaroo or something.
You could learn from it, but it's tragic.
Yeah.
Go on. Have you got? Sorry to cut you off.
Because it's just awful. It's a kangaroo, but it's also dead, and it's been eviscerated.
And it's used to create a disturbing musical.
It's used to create a really gaudy. Just ugly decoration, or it's a big pile of koala shit at the bottom of a tree. I don't know.
That's very nutritious and useful to eat if you want koala based gum leaf diet.
I've got one.
Yes.
In Priscilla Queen of the Desert, you've got that couple who pick up Bernadette, and they've got that dead kangaroo in the back of their pickup.
Yes.
That.
A maggot eating the corpse of a kangaroo.
Yeah, it's that sad and no one cares.
Yeah.
And it's a kangaroo. So that links to the kangaroo. It's Australian dying and sad. Any whimsical, happy thoughts from you, Anthony?
I can't think of anything Australian, but the kind of thing that I was thinking of is like, when you're a kid and you have to go to like a funeral, it's like you're going to your first funeral. It's necessary, and it's fine, and
it's fine,
and you know,
you understand what's happening, but at the same time, it doesn't really affect you unless it's directly.
Yeah, you're not old enough to be properly affected by just all death. Yeah,
yeah, but you kind of understand the kind of weird atmosphere that's going on.
Yeah.
But I can't. Can't think of anything specifically Australian that goes with funerals.
So it's when you're a child and you're mourning the loss of someone in your family.
Well, not necessarily, because you don't necessarily understand as a child what's going on.
Experience, a strange experience of a funeral as a child, where you know what's happened, but you're not old enough to be sad yet.
So what I'm competing with is it's the misused corpse of a kangaroo. A dead kangaroo that's got loads of flies buzzing around it in the back of a truck. Or it's going to a funeral as a child.
I also like that Anthony couldn't think of anything Australian, because we have literally named every Australian thing. Neighbours, Mad Max, Dot the Kangaroo, Core Cats, Didgeridoos.
The only thing you have left has something to do with Dame Edna Everidge.
That's the Australia checklist.
I will say, like, the film has some charm, so it's not totally irredeemable. Like, there are moments where it's kind of just pure atmosphere, and it's kind of immersive. They kind of happen right at the beginning.
That's the weird thing. Like, I'm not sure if they intended it to be this tragic, or if it just sort of panned out that way.
I think maybe the creators are a bit jaded, so all of this bleak sadness, they didn't really care or notice it being that sad, because they've had quite sad, dark lives themselves.
Also,
so
this is based on a book. It's based on a book. What is that book like?
Yeah.
Very sad.
You say it's got like bits of atmosphere, but it's the same atmosphere as when people go into the Black Lodge in Twin Peaks and they'd be like backwards talking to bots. Distant, haunting jazz music.
Like, I think we can all say that there's nothing really in here for anyone over the age of 7.
But then I wouldn't want kids to watch this either, because it would give them a horrible, skewed vision of what you're supposed to be.
Yeah, don't show it to children.
Yeah.
There's maybe subsequently been better ways to teach children. There's a middle ground between the bleak sadness and reality of life and nature that this film presents in a singy-song musical way, and Steve Irwin, when he was alive, wrestling every creature that's dangerous to the ground and showing it to you as it stabs him. Like, there's an easier way to show people and children what nature's like, and it's either making documentaries that film animals, or zoos or something. You don't have to grab them and throttle them, or make them saccharine and horrible and sad.
I think they're probably in a difficult position in Australia, because it's a country where 95% of the animals can and intend to kill you in some way.
It's not just the animals either. It's also the environment and the weather.
Yeah.
And sometimes the people. But mostly when you've got the environment.
You know, a desert that has spiders the size of cars. It's, it's hard to be cheerful.
But,
I was going to say, this is strange, because Australians, by and large, that we see in, like, pop culture and Australian people I've met always seem really, like, cheerful and upbeat.
Is it because they aren't in Australia?
Yeah.
Harsh.
Yeah. It's just, this seemed like such a bleak film for what seems such a cheerful I was going to say, a cheerful people then. And then that sounded really patronising and strange. Like there's still a British colony.
The thing with it is the creatures are all fairly, like, you know, no worries, kind of nice, self-involved people. Like, the animals, in many ways, they care to an extent, but they want to get on with their own lives. I think that the animals in this reflect the Australian people a little bit. They care, but they've got their own business, and they haven't got time for weird foreigners, so they just, you know, palm them off on the next person. I don't know, but
all of this started when we asked Anthony what his metaphor was for the week.
I've been trying. You've been saying things that I want to like get into beeline and get onto my rating and finish it off. When you mentioned the spiders that are not quite the same size as cars, Jamie, but they are as dangerous as cars. but the spiders in Australia, some of the dangerous, colourful ones, they're there to attract you. So it's got the appearance of being lovely and colourful and nice, but in fact it's full of tragic sadness that it's just suckered you in and it's going to kill you and leave you to die and eat your innards. So it's a dangerous spider only found in Australia, a kind of bizarre oddity of nature, and luckily there's you know 9 or 8 others there to try and kill you in some other way. But yeah, Dot and the Kangaroo is several corpses of kangaroos. you're at the funeral of many dead kangaroos with all the nasty creatures of Australia.
It says a lot for the film that nobody dies in it, but all of us, the message we took from it is death.
Yeah.
Well, it's the uncaring nature of humans. Humans are villains and hurt animals and don't understand them. And animals don't really care for humans, but are better than us because they'll at least try a little bit.
Can humans and animals live in harmony? No.
No. We're noisy, murdering
dogs and the kangaroo. Yeah.
And we're insensitive and we're destroyed. Yeah, it's kind of setting out that stall of we shouldn't ruin animals' lives and stuff, and we should respect the outback as being dangerous and for the animals. But and I think it succeeds in that. So, you know,
are the rest of the films of the director, whatever his name is, Isaac Yankum, as bleak as this one?
I think the bug one is a bit more chipper. Everyone's a bit more friendly in the one I've seen with the She Shrinks Down, I think. But the only way we'll know, Jamie, is if I suggest another Dot movie and you all agree to watch it. And with that unknown fate looming over us, there may never be another Dot one that we address, but they are out there and we have the potential to do them. But I've still got a Brave Little Toaster movie to suggest. The middle rubbish one that involves toasters and animals. God. And is going to be the wonderful between ground between Dot and the toaster franchise. But all that mystery we should leave because we don't know what we'll do in the future. But it will be a different film. And it, you know, will probably be in a week's time. Or they could be in a big pile on the internet somewhere. You'll just have to look out for them, listener. So, you know, let's pop our cork hats on and wander into the wilderness for another week and leave our listeners goodbye. To our listener, bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Come back, kangaroo, come back.
We're never coming back for you, kangaroo. Or Dot, whichever I should have said. Eat shit, Dot.